This morning, we find ourselves breathless with the disciples, and I just realized that's kind of apt for us right now. Running into and then out of an empty tomb, struggling for words, struggling for logic, struggling to make sense of and communicate what we are bearing witness to. We find ourselves lost in translation, running to tell our friends, come and see. Come lay eyes on what I have laid eyes on. Please hear me out. Please hear my story. But the knot in our throats and the thumping in our chests presses and suppresses the words. This morning, we find ourselves taking in the fullness of Holy Week, the palpable reality that our beloved friend Jesus has been unjustly detained, arrested, and executed by the state, buried in a tomb, and somehow found his way back to us as a living, breathing being. And as we gaze on that empty tomb, elated, confused, disturbed, afraid, the danger of the resurrection stares us right in the face. Even today, as we seek to proclaim resurrection and victory over death, alleluia, we find ourselves struggling to resist our own silence, struggling to speak about what we have seen, struggling to tell our story, struggling to give our testimony, struggling to proclaim that life can be brought forth out of death. Can life be brought forth out of death?
Come and see. Mary Magdalene arrives at the tomb and sees that things are not as she expected. The stone has been rolled away, but she has no framework, no construct for resurrection. It's not like she thought to herself, well, maybe he won't be there in the tomb today. How could we expect that of her or of any of the disciples? Resurrection has upset all expectations, and the only thing left to do is come and see. Not yet understanding, Mary runs back to the disciples, telling them, come and see. They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him. From John's gospel, we know that Mary Magdalene was one of the last people standing at the foot of the cross, witnessing the execution of Jesus as she stood with Jesus' mother and aunt. All of the other disciples had deserted Jesus at this point, afraid for their lives. Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, who we journeyed with earlier in this Lenten season, prepared the body of Jesus and buried him in a nearby tomb. It's Mary Magdalene who comes back to the tomb while it is still dark on the first day. Why does she have courage to stay to the end? What is it that she's seeking when she comes back early that morning?
The truth is, we know little about Mary Magdalene. The only other time she's mentioned is in passing in Luke's gospel, but it's an important passing. We hear that some women are accompanying Jesus, and Mary, called Magdalene, is one of them, the one from whom seven demons had gone out. Who really knows what the New Testament writers meant by demons, but we know it wasn't good? We don't know how long Mary Magdalene suffered, But we do know that Jesus healed her, that she was set free, that she was given new life.
So she arrives early at the tomb that morning looking for the body. She knows something about resurrection because of her own experiences, but she has no real construct for what she finds. Given her own experience, given her own transformation and resurrection, she doesn't give up or let go easily. First, she goes back to the disciples and declares, "Lord, they have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." The disciples come and see, and one even believes, and then they return to their home. Mary, however, stays. She wrestles. She persists. If nothing else, she persists in her grief, weeping and declaring the horrible loss of the one who heals, the one who makes whole. And in her persisting, in her grieving, she encounters Jesus. He calls her by name. This time she returns to the disciples and testifies, "I have seen the Lord." Nothing keeps her from telling her story.
Can't help but wonder how Mary was able to get this story out of her, though. How she was able to speak out something so stunning and disorienting and unsettling like this. I can't help but wonder what she might have been feeling, imagining, carrying as she internalizes this moment and then speaks it out. Remember, as we said, it is the women who stuck around and watched that whole crucifixion thing happen. They knew the death, saw the death, smelled the death, and not just any death, but violent execution. They watched Roman guards, keepers of the empire, parade Jesus through the city, place the means of torture on his back for him to carry and nail him to a cross, while he uttered things like, "Father, forgive them, and I thirst," ancient versions of, "I can't breathe," and, "Please don't let me die." They watched an innocent person completely annihilated by state-sanctioned violence, and now his body is not where it is supposed to be. Something that isn't going to sit well with a police force uninterested in further investigations about their misconduct. You can see why the disciples are spending their time in upper rooms behind locked doors.
But Mary, this one who'd witnessed the execution, who bore the suffering of the violence, who refuses to cover up her grief, her questions, her reckoning, her story, she proclaims, "Hear me out. Listen to my story. I've got a testimony."
How does Sabrina Fulton Martin travel around the country and tell her story? How does she get the words out of her mouth every time she talks about her son, Trayvon? How does she pull that thread of excruciating pain and still say out loud to crowds of people that she hopes the killing will stop and the healing will begin? How does a Palestinian woman in the village of Belin take Israeli tear gas grenades and turn them into planters for flowers in her backyard? How do we talk about our own trauma and wounds, about the myriad ways we have been violated, about the myriad ways we have faced death in our own lives, and still tell our stories, especially when it feels like telling our stories of resurrection might stir up a bit more dust? might even cause more of a ruckus or incite more violence that people blame on us, might make others angry that their efforts at silencing us aren't working.
How do your two new co-pastors, who spent years thinking that the only way forward meant either putting to death our love for each other or putting to death our love for the church, how do we keep telling our story? How do we resist the natural, sometimes daily, urge to choose a different version of our own death instead of the overwhelming, all-encompassing, resurrected life offered in this boundless, unsilent, outspoken, liberating Jesus?
How do we as a community pull out our Black Lives Matter sign out of the garbage can, out of the bowels of death and violence, and hang it back up over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, if we have to, in the light of the resurrected day?
How do we tell our stories of resurrection? How do we listen to each other's stories of resurrection? How do we resist silence even when it feels easier, quieter, safer to just shut up and sit down about the resurrections we are witnessing within us and around us, especially if those resurrections might stir up even more anger and frustration among those who have sold their souls to death?
Well, sometimes it's with short sentences and little fanfare. Sometimes we run to upper rooms behind locked doors and we eke out the words, "I've seen the Lord. I've seen the Lord." Sometimes we point to an empty tomb with trembling hands and red eyes and run back home breathless and overwhelmed. Sometimes we weep in gardens about it all, not understanding, lost in translation, waiting like Mary for our tangled, tentative questions to be answered. But if the resurrection tells us anything, it's to start talking,
to resist our silence,
to cultivate an imagination of resurrection, even if the cult of violence around us can only imagine death.
To proclaim with Mary, with grieving, stunned, empowered Mary, "I have seen the Lord."